Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Matt Forney. Matt, it's great having you back on.
Great to be back on again, Robert. Thanks for having me on again.
So there was this another shooting. This was in Virginia, and a black news reporter shot two other journalists.
I think the station was WBBJ in Richmond.
And you wrote an article about this called "Did the Media Drive Gay Black Man Vester Flanagan to Murder Two Journalists?"
Yes, I did. It's a the basic thrust of what I wrote about was in a suicide note Flanagan sent to ABC News before he committed the killings. He openly said that he was committing the shootings because he believed that there was a race war going on, that white people were targeting black people to kill them. He was specifically triggered by the Dylann Roof shootings in Charleston a couple months back, and he explicitly said that he was trying to start a race war. So my argument is that given that free shooters are usually, if possible, pinned on the right wing, Dylann Roof was blamed on American Renaissance and the Council of Conservative Citizens, etc., Why can't we blame Vester Flanagan on the media when he explicitly stated in his manifesto that he was trying to start a race war?
And the thing you pointed out is, like, American Renaissance, first of all, it's been pretty much totally marginalized, and second of all, American Renaissance and Jared Taylor goes out of their way to be very reasonable about how they deal with things. The Black Lives Matter movement is a widespread movement that has support within the mainstream media, and they actually have many of their members have gone way out of their way to incite violence.
Yes, when it came to the Dylann Roof shootings, no one can point to any sort of specific incident where Jared Taylor or American Renaissance, the Council of Conservative Citizens, or the alternative right in general is inciting people to, like, attack blacks or whatever. Nobody on the I don't want to say nobody, because there inevitably are cranks, but nobody of importance on the alternative right or at American Renaissance, nobody in American Renaissance is advocating that we shoot black people. Whereas, like, as you said, Black Lives Matter activists are going out of their way to cause public disruptions, whether it was the Black Brunch incidents in New York City, or it was about a month ago when Bernie Sanders was basically chased off his own stage at a campaign event in Seattle by Black Lives Matter protesters. And
that is just so idiotic, because out of all people running, Bernie Sanders is someone who's talking about the issues they supposedly care about, issues like reducing mass incarceration, cracking down on police brutality. So, I mean, out of all the people to go after, Bernie Sanders, I mean, it shows you, I mean, where they're, who is backing them. It's just very suspicious that they would choose Bernie Sanders out of all people.
I think a lot of it is just because the media has so coddled the Black Lives Matter protesters and blacks in general, and has wallpapered over black violence and has just covered up incidents like in Ferguson or the Trayvon Martin incident. These people have become so emboldened that they don't care that Bernie Sanders is technically on their side. They'll attack anyone if they so much as perceive them as being a millimeter out of line. Like, for example, before this incident in Seattle, Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley were heckled at a campaign event where Black Lives Matter protesters accused them of not being attentive enough to what black people are going through, apparently. Martin O'Malley said in his speech, well, of course Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. And when he said all lives matter, that just sets the Black Lives Matter people off in a dizzy.
Their whole thing is, I mean, they believe that white people are waging a race war against them, and they're totally deranged. They have this mentality that they're in the middle of a race war, and that kind of stereotype is something, it's like a stereotype of the most deranged, like, neo-Nazi. But this is the mentality of a movement, as I said, that has mainstream support from the media.
Yes, it's also worth noting that, as you pointed out, Robert, Black Lives Matter protesters are targeting their fellow leftists more vigorously than anyone else. Black Lives Matter is not aggressively going after Donald Trump or even any of the other GOP candidates. They're attacking Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley, and well, they're mysteriously ignoring Hillary Clinton for some reason. Though, I mean, I'm not going to say anything, but to a certain extent, the chaos being inflicted on Sanders and O'Malley's campaigns by Black Lives Matter indirectly benefits Hillary Clinton. But basically, this is the process we usually see with leftists. They're constantly engaged in a circular firing squad, seeking to excoriate each other for not being leftist enough. Black Lives Matter is about trying to basically defenestrate any leftist they insufficiently deem to be left wing, or to be more specific, any leftist they deem any politician, left wing politician, they deem insufficiently supportive of Black Lives Matter.
And with Hillary, I mean, they're leaving Hillary alone. That could show you that they could be supported by the Hillary campaign. I mean, I haven't seen the evidence put out, like solid evidence, but it would make absolute sense. And Hillary under her husband Bill, under the Clinton administration, that was actually the largest increase in incarceration of blacks because of Bill Clinton's federal crime bill.
Yeah, pretty much. I forgot where I read this, but I forgot the specific name of one of the major Black Lives Matter organizers. It's DeRay something or other. He actually endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. So Black Lives Matter has a definite bias, if not in favor of Hillary Clinton, then against Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, and the other Democratic candidates. Hillary Clinton, there's a marked difference in the way Hillary Clinton is running her current presidential campaign versus how she ran in 2008. In 2008, she ran as the candidate representing the Democrats' traditional white working class base, more or less, while Obama ran as the candidate representing young people, minorities, upwardly mobile bourgeois bohemians, you know, or what was termed back in the Swipple, the stuff white people like, those sorts of people, you know, like hipsters. And Obama was able to crush Hillary's presidential ambitions with that coalition. But with her 2016 campaign, I noticed, like, in the very first the campaign launch video, Hillary made a point of ticking off every minority on the privileged minorities list. She had black people, gay and lesbian couples, and I don't think there was a transgender person in there just yet, but I wouldn't put it past her to start embracing that. It was clear, to use a leftist term, it's clear dog whistling to tell the minorities that Hillary is now their girl. And Black Lives Matter is inadvertently helping reinforce this by attacking Bernie Sanders more or less as an old, out-of-touch white man who is unresponsive to the terms of to the needs of minorities. Although, ironically, Sanders is far more radical than Hillary could ever be.
And, I mean, if you look at police brutality, there have been plenty of instances of black police officers or black correctional officers abusing whites.
Yeah, pretty much. If there is a race war in this country, it's going in the opposite direction. We've had well documented instance of so-called polar bear hunting or knockout king, where blacks will go around beating the shit out of white people for fun. Black on white crime is covered up by the media. This has been going on since long before Obama became president. But like whenever the media reports on a crime, they will only report the person's race if the perpetrator is white. If they don't mention the race, then it's because the perpetrator is black or Latino or whatever. Basically, if there is a race war going on in this country, it's being largely coming from blacks towards whites, and it's being fed by the media, who wants to spin this this narrative of black people being institutionally oppressed and by white and abused by whites. And in the case of Vester Flanagan, we saw a someone who was already mentally unstable taking this narrative to heart and actually going out and killing white people based on it.
Well, I want to get into the psychology behind him. There's different stereotypes about mass shooters and perceptions about their psychology. And we've talked about this a lot on our previous shows. There's sort of the stereotype of a mass shooter who's a person. I think the perfect example of that is like the Tony Meander character in the Columbine Pilgrim, someone who's been very kind of quiet and meek their whole life and has been pushed around. And then finally they build up, the rage builds up and they finally snap. But if you look at this shooter and you analyze his life, in high school, first of all, in high school, he's homosexual, but he, back in the 80s when he was in high school, he was well liked, and I think he was voted like most popular in the yearbook on something. They kind of carved out a niche as this sort of effeminate friend of the popular girls, and then he went on and did have success in he had success in journalism, and he seems to be someone who was pretty outgoing, but he had extreme narcissism, and also like his looks as he got older. Like he posted all these pictures of when he was younger, and so he had extreme narcissism, and he was also very, very hypersensitive. He was always getting into... one of the other journalists made a comment, like, I'm going over to Cotton Hill Road, and he was like, are you telling me to pick some cotton? So he was just someone he was very obnoxious towards other people. He sort of differs from that stereotype that Tony Meander, the character Andy Nowicki's book, embodies.
I think it's pretty obvious that Vester Flanagan was deeply mentally ill and deeply narcissistic. The anonymous conservative blog covered Vester Flanagan's shootings pretty extensively. Like one of the so-called dog whistles he kept apparently hearing. There was another one where he actually sued before when he was fired. He sued his employers for racial discrimination, claiming that among other things, they had his coworkers had brought a watermelon into the office to taunt him, and they put it in a specific spot of the kitchen precisely to taunt him, and that he was also apparently discriminated against for being homosexual. It's pretty obvious. The suit was dismissed, showing that he was pretty much all of his claims are complete and utter horseshit. His entire line of a good portion of his narcissism seems to stem back from his really, really screwed up upbringing. From what I recall, again, I don't have the details in front of me, but his parents divorced at a very young age, and that his father tried to get Flanagan and his siblings away from their mother, who was very violent and very deeply mentally ill. And from what it looks like, she passed on her mental illnesses to her son, who consequently developed some new ones of his own. And also, a good portion of his mental illness, the mental illness that drove him to commit these shootings, is probably in part due to the fact that he was homosexual. Homosexuals suffer from mental illness at much higher rates than heterosexuals do, and they also suffer from far more bizarre paraphilias and different, more virulent types of the same sorts of mental disorders. So claiming that... So far as I can tell, Flanagan had no legitimate grievances. He was just a very disturbed individual who drove his coworkers crazy and eventually claimed to determine that the entire world was out to get him.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Dylan Roof, for instance, I mean, I'm not excusing what he did. What he did was barbaric, but if you analyze his life, I mean, Dylan Roof was actually someone... First of all, he grew up into poverty, and then on top of being poor and economically disadvantaged, he had no job prospects. He was also very he was very kind of shy, quiet, and meek, and that's sort of a tough combination to be grow up in poverty and being surrounded in kind of a rough environment where you have a lot of tough rednecks, but also blacks. So Dylan Roof probably had a much he probably had a tougher upbringing than this guy.
Oh yeah, Flanagan was a Flanagan was a successful, well, at the time before he his neuroses got him fired from his job. He was had a successful career in journalism as a TV broadcaster. And so far as I can tell, his coworkers didn't discriminate against him for being black or gay. If they treated him unfairly, it was because he was a complete weirdo who kept, like, harassing them with his narcissistic fantasies. And I should also point out that Flanagan, in his suicide note, also claimed that he had been working as a prostitute, a gay prostitute, and that he had been making, I don't know, something like $2,000 per sexual encounter, or $2,000 a month, or something ridiculously high like that. So we're talking about someone who is deeply mentally ill, but also, relative to other spree shooters, incredibly privileged. Pretty much all his perceived problems came from his own actions.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying he's benefited from his victim status. There's do you know the kind of the stereotype of spree shooters as being like white men who are loners and economically disadvantaged? And some of them do fit that category, like the last guy who shot up the theater in, like Dylan Roof, for the last guy who shot up the theater in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Fletcher Flanagan is a pretty obviously mentally ill individual who was arguably, and there's a good deal of evidence to suggest this by the media's own logic, was provoked into these shootings by the media's constant race baiting blacks and whites to shooting each other.
So you posted some comments on Twitter from members of Black Lives Matter. I'll read them. One of them said, "Woke up this morning, got on Twitter. First thing I see is two white people got killed. World's becoming a better place." Another comment said, "Some say disgruntled employee, others say terrorist. Whiteness will explain away nearly anything." And then another one says, no one's defending a murderer, but no one cares about white people getting killed.
Yeah, this is the movement that is mainstream. Black Lives Matter from top to down. I mean, a lot of it is a hashtag phenomenon. It's a lot like these decentralized protest campaigns like Anonymous or Gamergate. But it's filled with people, with black people who've been radicalized to hate white people. Radicalized by the media constantly pushing a false narrative that blacks are discriminated against, that blacks are being targeted for rape or murder or robbery by white people. Black Lives Matter is a deliberate, not directly, but it would not have come about if the media had not constantly was not constantly race baiting and taking black people's side in everything and radicalizing blacks. And to a lesser extent, radicalizing whites. And it's only getting worse. A few days ago, I think it was Louis Farrakhan announced more or less that black people should start killing cops. It's only going to get more violent from here on out. I'm not saying this because I want it to be violent. I'm saying it because that's what the media wants. The media has been race baiting to push a left wing Marxist narrative of black oppression at the hands of the evil white man, and now it's spilling over into violence. And in the case of Black Lives Matter, black people openly saying that they want white people to die.
And if anyone else advocated any kind of mildly, thinly veiled threats against law enforcement, like if they were a right-wing white person, they would be investigated and probably charged with a crime immediately.
Oh yes, if you're right wing and you say anything that could even remotely be construed as a threat, the hammer will be brought down on your ass so quick you won't know what happened. I mean, this is only tangentially related, but I was sort of at the receiving end of one of these campaigns about a year ago. When it broke that the UVA rape case was like a hoax, I commented on Twitter something to the effect of, "We're going to find everyone, basically everyone who supported the rape hoax and bought Rolling Stone's story. We're going to make them sorry." Some SJW Arthur Chu, the Jeopardy guy, latched onto that. He said, "Matt Forney is threatening to dox people who support the UVA rape victim. Let's report him and get him banned from Twitter." I was not making a threat, but all these people interpreted it as a threat because they're insane. But this is the state of affairs in America today. You can, if you're left wing, you can outright you can go all the way up to threatening to kill the president, and you'll be okay. But if you're right wing, and if you make anything that's even remotely construed as a threat, you will have a you will be punished to the fullest extent that social justice warriors can punish you.
What do you think about the argument that the majority of mass shooters are white?
I think a lot of it is, all these shooters are driven by mental illness. That much is obvious. But I think in the case of these white shooters, it's more of a it's a combination of mental illness, economic marginalization, sexual marginalization. None of these people should be excused for what they did. Killing people who had done nothing to you, killing innocent people in cold blood is always a monstrous act, and it always should be condemned. But when you scratch the case of these white spree shooters, we see a clear social trend of this is what happens when you marginalize and deprive an entire class of people from anything resembling economic success. The more mentally ill sectors, portions of them, will lash out. And if I recall correctly, there was a news item shortly after the Lester Flanagan shootings that showed that in the year 2015, we're basically at the rate of having one spree shooting a day now. It's a clear trend that's increasing, regardless of irrespective of everything else, when it indicates that something is very, very deeply wrong with American culture.
And it's happening. I mean, it's not one particular group. It's all ethnicities. It's all socioeconomic groups. It's all races. It's very diverse. It's a very diverse group of people. I mean, it is, the majority of them are men. I guess there's been a few women who have been spree shooters, but the majority have been men. But it's been they're very diverse group of all walks of life.
Yeah, there's a good deal of diversity, but a disproportionate percentage of them are white men for the reasons I laid out. A good portion of it is driven by media coverage. Like, white men who go on spree shootings are going to get way more coverage because it helps the media push their narrative of white men are evil, white men need to be controlled, toxic masculinity, whiteness is bad, and we need gun control. Note that the media immediately hushed up about the Vester Flanagan shootings when they discovered that the killer was a gay black man.
And, yeah, that's the irony, is this is a person who actually would have had who is a group who's sort of a favored victim status group, who he's black and homosexual. What you touched on something with some of the straight white male shooters. I mean, if you look at someone like the Aurora, Colorado shooter, James Holmes, he was mentally disturbed, but do you think if he were around, say, like 30 years ago, would he have a better chance of having like a stable sort of a middle-class life and having access to having a girlfriend or wife?
I think to a certain extent, a lot of these people who go on spree shootings 30 years ago would have still been somewhat marginal, but they would have been better off in various ways. They would not have been driven into the pit of murderous mental illness that they have in our modern society.
And this also, you did another podcast about autism and Asperger's. And
yeah.
The point you were making is you get people, a lot of people who have Asperger's are a lot of them are actually very intelligent. They're not necessarily a bunch of retards, but they're a little bit off socially, but I think they could thrive in the right environment, like if they have a strong community. But what's happening is, on one hand, their parents kind of, they have parents who maybe spoil them as kids and constantly tell them they're fantastic, but then when they go out into the world, they find a pretty fucked up society. I mean, the way people communicate is very, you said the way people communicate in itself is autistic, so a lot of these people are doubly screwed.
Yeah, pretty much. The severe sort of number one, the so-called rising autism rates. A lot of it is just overdiagnosis. But at the same time, our society as a whole is becoming generally very autistic. I've written about this and talked about this before. Millennials are increasingly incapable of normal in-person, person-to-person interaction. Everything has to be mediated by a screen, even when it comes to like sleazy hookups in the form of Tinder or whatnot. Young people are increasingly uncomfortable with sex and sexual contact. Studies show that millennials are having less sex than at their age than Gen Xers and baby boomers did when they were young. This is having a stronger effect on people who are already at the margins. In this case, autistic people who grow up in a society who are already at a disadvantage socially. And if society was healthier, they would be able to they would have a better chance of becoming normal, productive adults, as was the case 40, 30 years ago when we seemingly didn't have the severe cases of autism that we do now. But because our society is so atomized and so lacking in any sense of community, we end up with these extreme basket cases like, you know, Christian, you know, the archetypical example of the autistic asshole who uses his autism as an excuse to be an asshole.
You gave an example of that young man who did the outburst in the movie theater, or you get pretty much people who are pretty much they're not obnoxious, but you get people who maybe are a little bit off, but they could function in a society if they have a community around them of people who act normal. But if they're just thrown out into an atomized society where everyone else is not socially interacting normally, then they're not going to connect health in a healthy manner, and then they become they start to develop more severe psychological problems. The other factor is with the economy. The economy is getting a lot more competitive. It's harder to find a job. So a lot of people with Asperger's, they do terribly on job interviews. I know I did an interview with Robert Lindsay. He was telling me he had a friend who had Asperger's, and this guy is, like, really intelligent. He has an IQ of, like, 140, but he can't get a job because he just performs poorly in the job interviews.
Yeah, pretty much. We're seeing a whole class of people being pushed to the economic margins. And I'd say this is to a certain extent where all these weird sort of subcultures have popped up. Not only like social justice warriors in general, pretty much the vast majority of them are never going to have any sort of success in the job market. The more severe sectors where you find on Tumblr of like, you know, teenagers who are claiming that they have the soul of a dragon, or that they're transracial, or you have like bronies, like grown men who are obsessing over a children's cartoon about My Little Pony. All these cultures are flourishing as a sort of halfwit alternative to a real world community that doesn't exist. But all these communities are dysfunctional in their own way because, well, grown men should not be obsessing over little pink ponies. It's a direct result of the economic marginalization of all these people.
So, should these people, do you think they, do you view them as losers or victims or a little bit of both?
I'd say a bit of both, because like after a certain point, people are responsible for their own actions. If you're 35 and like dressing up in an anatomically accurate pony suit and going and having public sex with other furries at a convention, then yeah, you're pretty much screwed. You made a conscious choice to do that sort of thing. But at the same time, we've seen these people to a certain extent have been frauded into being losers by a dysfunctional society. So on one hand, they are responsible for their own actions, but on the other hand, you know, what options did these people have? Not that many.
Yeah, I mean, their product, it's easy to focus on individuals who are weird, but there's just something fundamentally wrong about the way society is structured.
Pretty much. We're seeing all the evidence of a collapsing society around us, whether it's spree shootings, whether it's this, that, the rise of weird subcultures, the weird fascistic behavior of like social justice warriors who are searching for a cause. Basically, I'm not going to be a doomer and say like in a month we're all going to be living in bunkers, afraid of nuclear war. But at the same time, we're watching a society we're watching our society sort of fall apart in very, very slow motion, and it seems to be picking up with each year. Like as I mentioned before, the statistics showing that there's been at least one spree shooting every day in the year 2015. It's only going to get worse from here on out before it gets better.
What do you think about the phenomenon of young men joining ISIS, and not just Arab and Muslim men, but there's been a lot of young white men from America and Europe as well?
Well, I believe they're doing it. It's a more traditional version of a sort of longing of the reason why young people become social justice warriors. These men are looking for a cause to fight in. They can't find one in this country, so they're going abroad to find one. Say what you will about the Islamic State, it seems to an impressionable young mind, it seems like a rising force. They have a functioning government. They're winning battles against more established military powers. They're fashioning a new society out of whole cloth. To a young man who basically has no prospects back home, this sort of thing is very, very attractive indeed.
And do you see this kind of stuff growing in the future among other socio-economic and cultural groups besides Muslims, something like ISIS?
I can't say for sure what will happen, but I will say that basically the increasing evidence shows that our society in general is headed for a big, huge fall. So the current values, the current progress of progressive civilization is not going to last for much longer. Something new is going to take its place, I don't think it's going to be Islam or any form of Islamic group. The Islamic State is not going to establish their worldwide caliphate, no matter what their YouTube propaganda videos say. But something newer and more vigorous is going to replace the degenerate society that we live in now. It's inevitable.
I mean, one thing that's happening is you see religious groups forming their own communities, and especially groups that have high birth rates, like examples would be Mormons or Orthodox Jews.
We're seeing these sort of these societies within societies growing that are healthier and more functional than the greater society. The Mormons, the Orthodox Jews, the Amish exist in their own little worlds. They're more or less self-sufficient. They don't rely on the outside government or the outside society to provide them with anything at all. We're going to see that sort of thing growing, and we're going to see see more and more of these fringe groups chipping away at the margins, taking away legitimacy from our surrounding government, surrounding society, because it is sick.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened in Lebanon with Hezbollah. Lebanon didn't have a functioning government, so Hezbollah came along and they provided like social services, schools, healthcare, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to, or to give another example along those lines. We see the rise of Golden Dawn in Greece, where even with the purportedly anti-austerity communist Syriza government, boy, that worked out well. We see Golden Dawn is basically taking control, and it's a de facto authority in many portions of Athens and the country at large, providing policing, aid to the poor, the governmental structures that the Greek government is failing to provide. So we're going to see and one could argue that in many inner cities in the U.S., gangs in like black or Latino areas have in many places taken over the functions that the city is supposed to provide. So we're seeing a fragmentation of the as the central government becomes more impotent and people refuse to believe in the lies that it puts out. We're seeing a fragmentation into all these different sort of fiefdoms who are each claiming a bit of the pie. All these different groups organized along racial or ethnic lines or religious lines.
So you wrote another article. This is your most recent one. Why the Manosphere. Fear of TradCons is misguided and cowardly.
Yes, basically this is a sort of trope in the Manosphere that it's thankfully less common, but I still see it being pushed from time to time, that traditional conservatives or traditionalists or whatever you want to call them are no different than the left. They want to enslave men. They enforce male disposability, a term that no one is able to define for me adequately, and they are an equal threat, and the only way to be pro-male is to go beyond left and right. And the point I was making in that article that while the right wing has done some stupid things and they have rolled over for leftism in many ways, they're not an equivalent a threat to the left. Pretty much bit of legislation that serves to curtail the rights of men comes from the left. It may have some dopey support from stupid idiots on the right, but that's not the same thing as the right actually working to bring men down.
There's been examples of collusion. I'll give you one example. There was a bill sponsored by a Democrat, Maria Cantwell, from Washington with Republican Sam Brownback that made it difficult for men to import foreign wives. And I mean, usually our politicians are, usually you see like a Democrat and Republican working together to bring in more immigration, but that is like one area where our politicians become xenophobic and anti-immigrant. But that's an example of a social, Sam Brownback is like a big figure in the religious right. And he co-sponsored that bill to make it difficult to import foreign wives.
There is a good amount of collusion, but collusion is not the same thing as creation. The real villain in that instance would be Maria Cantwell, because she's the one who conjured up the damn thing. And we see this pattern repeating over and over again. Like, just look at the example I gave is to look at how far the Overton window, the culture in general, has shifted to the left since Obama became president. We've seen gay marriage forced down everyone's throat through the Supreme Court ruling. We see Christian business owners who don't want to contravene their beliefs by acknowledging gay marriage being persecuted by the government, the case of those Christian bakers in Oregon. We've seen the rise of the social justice warriors, basically trying to ruin the life of anyone they perceive as being insufficiently leftist. We've seen rape being redefined. Even back in 2008, there were still fringe mewlings about rape from the radical feminist wing of the left about rape being whenever a man makes a woman uncomfortable. But now, with 6 years of Obama, we've seen enthusiastic consent and yes means yes being codified into law, and governments moving to redefine rape to basically mean anything that makes a woman uncomfortable. We saw an attempt to create a Reichstag fire incident to justify anti-male legislation in the UVA rape hoax story. One of the people who was connected to that story, Emily Renda, who was purportedly responsible for introducing Sabrina Rubin Early, who wrote the article, to the purported rape victims, is on the Virginia Governor's Task Force on Preventing Sexual Violence, and she is also an associate of President Obama. So while you do have some idiotic man up mewling from the right wing and from and a small scale act of collusion, you don't have the virulent animus for men and for men's rights on the right that you do from the left.
And I see a generation gap among social conservatives and conservatives in general. The biggest complaint I hear against social conservatives is that they're telling men, like, to man up and basically to behave like a man from the 1950s without any of the benefits. But that's more from, like, the old guard, like the Bill Bennett types. I do see a lot of changes. Like, you give an example, Milos Yiannopoulos at Breitbart wrote that excellent article, The Sexodus.
Yes, we've also seen, I think it's Paul Joseph Watson over at InfoWars, the big booster of the manosphere and neo-masculinity in general. We've seen a lot of ideas talked about on the alternative right in regards to men, women, and sexuality percolate out into the greater conservative mainstream. The quote-unquote tradcon stereotype that people in the manosphere like to bash men's rights activists and men going their own way is a dying breed. It doesn't really exist anymore. Those people have no influence anymore. Like, for example, the Trump campaign, the Donald Trump campaign, is being driven by young conservatives who have had it with the cuck conservatives, the traditional wing of the GOP. So claiming that the right is just as bad as the left in this particular instance is is incredibly stupid.
Yeah, I mean, with Donald Trump, I've been reading a lot of articles about him. He's been very popular. He's combining, like, the issues of not just he has the immigration issues and those kinds of issues, but I notice he's also taking a more economically populist stance, and all the mainstream conservatives are like, you're not a real Reagan conservative, but I see that as a good thing. Because I'll give an example. Is Donald Trump made a comment he said hedge fund managers aren't paying their fair share in taxes, and that the idea of a flat tax where everyone pays the same amount that most of the mainstream conservatives who worship Reagan have been proposing is utterly insane.
Yeah, pretty much. We've seen mainstream conservatism devolve into basically let the borders be open, let gay people get married and fornicate in the streets, so long as we have low tax rates. That's pretty much the sole reasonable argument I can hear from the cuck conservatives. I'm like, Donald Trump is a bad candidate. He's not a perfect cut the taxes at all times individual. It doesn't matter that he's proposing a position on immigration that every cuck conservative has claimed they've wanted for the past 20 years. I mean, talk radio hosts like Michael Savage have been banging on about closing the borders since as long as they've been on the air. And it doesn't matter that Trump is advocating for that. He's a bad guy because he doesn't think the tax rate should be cut from 35% to 30% or whatever pointless economic argument they masturbate over.
And, I mean, the whole sort of whole Reagan era, I mean, when I think of I hear conservatives on AM talk radio saying we have to go back to Reagan. Basically, when I think of Reagan legacy, I think of tax cuts for the ultra-rich combined with more amnesty and more jobs going overseas and more deregulation on Wall Street. That's basically it.
Yeah, basically we need to repeat what Reagan did and didn't work. And you know, I can excuse Reagan for amnesty and anyone else who had supported that back then because it was the first time it had been tried. But anyone who supports amnesty now is an absolute fool because we have evidence that it didn't work. The proof that it didn't work is the fact that we're still discussing this problem nearly 30 years later.
So before I wrap up the show, is there anything else you'd like to add about any of these topics, about the shooting or about the article on social conservatives?
I think we covered all the bases.
Okay, so Matt Forney, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me on again, Robert.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.